My Muscle Project. Welcome back to this episode of In the Black. We have an exciting one for you today. We are going to be taking you through rebranding. The whys, why you should and why you shouldn't. Some examples of bad rebrands. It's kind of like a hot topic at the moment, especially a lot of you gym owners listening that have CrossFit affiliates that are thinking, man, is it time to drop the CrossFit name? Is it time to drop the affiliation? That is one part of the show that we'll get into. But then we'll also dive into some examples outside the fitness industry, which we thought have done poorly and also done well, and just generally the impacts rebranding has on your business. So we're very excited to kind of dive into all that. Before we get into it, last week we did probably one of my favorite episodes on In the Black we've done for a while. It was on pricing, and a lot of you gave us some good feedback. A lot of you downloaded the pricing guide, and when I was putting up the new guide, I realized in that moment that, holy shit, we've actually put on like some of our best information in just these free guides. If you're a business owner, if you're thinking about starting a business, if you have a business, our guides are like, they're so well-rounded, so valuable. Like there's the personal development side of things to improve your productivity, your habits, your routines. Then there's the, which I think is always understated at how valuable they are until you start going through that stuff. And then there's all like the hard, there's like the really black and white economics of running a business, the guides that you created, Raf, around the business metrics and the profitability and stuff.
And the sales guide.
Yep. And then the sales guide is a huge one as well. Obviously, like reading that, if you implement even one of those things, you get a return straight away. Like you start making more money.
A return on a free guide.
Which is crazy. that's a great return. And then you've got the outsourcing guide, which is huge as well. I think it's just a totally... I think when you read a guide like that and you haven't been outsourcing much of your work recently, if you feel like you've just been doing the same job in your business over and over and over again and you're not growing, you read something like that and you think, oh, holy shit, I should have outsourced, you know, 5 out of these 10 things. And then the pricing guide, I thought it was really good. I've sent it to a few people already. They're creating some new offerings in their business. Some people actually rebranding as well. And I said, hey, pricing can also be a part of rebranding. We'll go into a little bit today. Pricing's huge, man. Like if we didn't, I think pricing is so, and we talked about it on the podcast last week, it's just so underestimated in how impactful it is, especially from an economic perspective. Like, you know, I wrote the formula, like a really basic formula in that guide, which was, I can't remember exactly how I wrote it, but it was like, how much money you want to make at like a 30% margin before owners pay, I'm like, is like the gold standard. Like if you hit that, you're killing it, right? And I said, okay, so work back from there. It would be like, you know, all the revenue, all the money you'd make. It'd be like how many members you can fit in, the most amount of money you can charge them. So that'd be like your average client value minus all the costs associated with the business and the tax. And you basically multiply that out, however it works in a monthly scale or a yearly scale or whatever you want to do. And you can see pretty quickly from that if you're ever going to hit a really good profit percentage. Because you might be at a price point. Say the max, because people don't really think what the maximum amount of people are at their gym is, right? They just go, oh, yeah, I'm just going to keep making more money as more people come in. Well, there's serious limits to like space and equipment. And those are the things that you learn as you start to grow. And if 150 is like the max before the quality of your service diminishes, and you're stuck at a price point that only works for 300 people, you may need to double your prices or find a way to increase your profitability. So I think that formula has kind of set up the guide really well. And I was just really happy with how that guide turned out. And it's all free. MyMuscleProject.com/free. You guys can pick up those guides. All right. Where are we going to get started in this rebranding episode?
So this is a big one. I mean, we've rebranded the gyms before.
Yep.
And it's probably a process. I think anyone that doesn't just dabble in like having a gym or a fitness business ends up having to do at some point.
What was the date we rebranded? Do you remember? 2000? I feel like we've been a new brand for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Two and a half?
I think when we got the third location. So it was like 2000. And,
you're right.
Yeah. Basically end of 2016, start of 2017.
Yeah.
I think we did the process.
17, 18, so 19, 3 years.
Yeah, we've done 3 years of it. And I think there's some really good reasons why you should consider it, or maybe you stop putting it off, but also some stuff that you need to be aware of going through the process. Number one is, I mean, this is a huge one if you've been going for, over 3 years, is at some point you do have to rebrand just because the times change and like the colors and designs and everything that is just like popular and hot and just makes people, want to walk in the door and exercise, that changes over time.
Yeah, 100%. And it doesn't take long for that to happen. You know, it does. It happens kind of slowly in some senses, but in other senses, it also happens very quickly these days because people are consuming so much more content. If you change the tone, the look, and the feel of content, people are going to hyper-consume it. So they're going to turn trends into maybe something that stretched out over a year because, you know, you weren't absorbing that so much content into like a month, right? You can completely change what is good practice for websites and website design in the space of like 6 months, which is crazy because, you know, website design and look and feel for industries specifically, even across industries, would take years to change. And now they're happening at a much faster rate.
Yeah, I mean, you see it. It's so much faster than it used to be.
And so much faster.
I reckon something to do with fitness being so young makes it even faster.
Yes.
Because it's less established. Trends come faster. And everyone knows fitness got a lot of trends.
Yeah.
A lot of bad ones that die pretty quick, which accelerates it. But I think the other side of that is changing your colors and changing the look of it is one thing. I think you've got to be more careful and just more considered when you're really changing the name and the real like letters that define your business, because that affects you so much online in terms of you know, people searching and looking for your business.
Oh yeah, the your trading name.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why we chose, like, we wanted to keep the iconic part of Creature a part of our gyms, but we didn't want to, you know, completely rebrand it at all. And now there, you know, with Google, it still works. Like if we went from CrossFit Creature to I don't know, Renegade Fitness or something, right? People will still, when they search Renegade Fitness, they'll still find CrossFit Creature because a lot of the SEO is still tied up. So you don't lose it completely, but it's just something to consider that you will have, you know, you will have more difficulty long term, I think, if you don't leave in one of the search terms. And some of the best brands have been is they take the most unique part of their name and they just keep that in there. And most gyms are like CrossFit something or something CrossFit, and they keep that something section of it and they, you know, add training or athletic or fitness or facility, whatever it might be. And that's really the smart way to do it.
Yeah, you just got to consider it a lot more, right? Because if you throw everything out, it just makes it even challenging, I think, how people talk about your business.
Yeah.
Because they're like trying to tell their friends about it, right? And like no one knows the name of it.
Yeah.
You just got to consider it. I don't think that's something you'd want to change every year.
Yeah.
It's the name of your business.
Yeah. And look, if you can, you know, ideally you would never have to change the name. You picked the name right from the start. But look, I'll be the first one to say, like, when when we started this naming thing, not a lot of consideration went into it. So, you know, we mentioned that Raf and I have a big, exciting change and announcement coming, which we do. But as a result of that is, you know, we're going to have to participate in this kind of naming process again for this new thing. And what I realized is you can invest tens of thousands of dollars in naming workshops just to find the right name for your company. And I was thinking, wow, you know, that is not a consideration that it's not a consideration most people take when they're starting their business. But the name is very powerful. Yeah, it's something you can definitely get wrong at the start, and it can be easy to change it because you got it so wrong. But if you put the right amount of time into it and you're happy with the name, you should never have to change it, ideally.
Yeah, and you just got to think about the downstream consequences. You know, if you go from, say, like CrossFit X to X something else, obviously you're going to get less of the CrossFit people inquiring. Maybe that's a good thing for you. Maybe that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But just thinking longer term and about the actual, like, the next consequences that are going to happen over the next months and years for you is worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. What's the next part?
So another good reason is, and I think this is probably, you'd probably say this is the number one reason we did it, would be changing over time the customer you want to serve and then changing the look of the brand to really attract that. And I think that's a huge one in fitness because you start out and you're not really sure who you like to work with. So you just like give it a crack. And then really quickly over like maybe the first few years, you're like, you know what? I hate all these clients. I can't stand these clients. These are the clients I want more of. And then you think about redesigning to make it more attractive to them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people, we've built on this in the last few episodes, is that most people are building a business that they would want and that they like. But unless you're your customer, which in most of the fitness industry, you're not serving yourself, you're serving someone different, then you need to build the look, feel, and brand that is for that customer. And I think a lot of us, when we started, we didn't do that. We weren't considering that person, what they'd like. You know, if it is a very young demographic, then you probably need something that's probably more young, more hip, more the, you know, youthful colors, right? More energy. If you're serving a much older demographic, you may want more of a classic look. You may want something with more, you know, tones and grays and stuff. And, you know, premium and standard. So premium versus standard versus cheap, they all have different color palettes that go along with them. You know, they all have different look and feels, and there's so much emotion that's associated with color and website and photography and all this stuff. And if it's not considered properly, then you're not going to be able to, you know, the person. So there's a subconscious feeling that people will get when they see something that's for them. They'll go, wow, you know, I am this customer and that is the brand that appeals to me. And it just could be like anything simple that you guys like. For example, when you go to the supermarket and you want to pick out, say, a protein bar off the shelf, depending on what type of training you do, different protein bars will appeal to you. If you do yoga, you're going to like a more brown, kind of tanned, natural, like organic looking bar product, right? Because that's kind of associated with your training. You know, if you're a lot more hardcore bodybuilding, that sort of stuff, you might like the reds and the whites and like the yellows and the blues. You want that kind of hardcore training feel. It's got different texts associated with it. So automatically, depending on your worldview and what you associate with, those brands and those types are popping out to you. And you know, that person that's a fucking meathead, he doesn't pick up the vegan paleo organic bar. You know, he picks up, you know, the muscle milk 3x 1000 with caffeine in it. Like that's what he goes for, because that company has built something specifically for that person. And that's just the same principles you need to use in your branding for your gym.
Yeah, I think this is probably the best reason to go about it, to go about the rebrand, because everyone has that moment when you're running a fitness business, because it's so client intensive. I think it's the most important thing when you're running the business, like who's the people coming in to train? Because it changes your happiness, particularly if you're still, like most people, on the floor a lot, you're seeing the clients a lot. I mean, it changes everything about your business, the type of client that comes in. So if you are considering it, if it's not really one of the biggest reasons is to attract more of the type of client you want to work with, you might want to reconsider it.
Even to some extent, I would say, as part of your rebrand, it's not just the online stuff as well. It's also the space that you have. You know, you may need a new liquor color.
Yeah. Right?
You may need to, you know, potentially even get rid of some equipment. Maybe you don't have, like I'll speak from our example. There's no point us having climbing ropes hanging from the gym. It's one of the most hardcore looking pieces of equipment. You look like an army base and like we don't even use it, you know, because yeah, at the end of the day, people don't need a climbing rope to get fit. It's a CrossFit thing, right?
It's a very safe way to get fit. It's climbing up 30 feet.
Yeah, it's,
slip.
It's definitely low risk, high reward. Yeah, not the opposite.
Yeah, you could just do pull-ups one, like 5 centimeters above the ground. You're like, no, I'm gonna do it about 30 feet.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah, I'm fatigued, right? Yeah. And so it's unnecessary, right? And that could be part of your rebrand. You might not have that thing. You may want to finally take the graffiti off your wall because you realize, you know, 18 to 21 year old boys that want to just like slam barbells with their shirts off, turns out they don't have like very, you know, they don't have incomes basically, right? They might have a little bit of pocket money. They might have part-time jobs, but they're not making bank. So they probably can't afford the personal training upsell, right? They probably can't afford the supplement upsell. So these are just, yeah, exactly what I've said. Major things to consider is like, what does your ideal client want? What do they want from space? And then, yeah, make some of those physical changes as well.
And then I think the other side of the coin here is critical, which is, and this is going to be an understanding you're going to have going into it, is that people just hate change. Like, just full stop. You know, even if it's a good change, people just tend to absolutely hate it.
Instagram.
So it's going to be, you know, number one, you're probably always going to get some pushback from your existing clients, but there can be also points where you just go too far and maybe it's very justified and people are just like confused about what you stand for right now. Yeah. Or like, man, am I to like get out of the gym now because like you don't want people like me in the gym? You just want to consider that. You want to consider, hey, am I going too far? And then also just consider or just preempt, people are going to be, no matter how good of a job I do with this, people are going to be maybe upset about it.
Yeah, I think if I could do our rebrand again, you know, when we went about it, I don't think we probably had a really good sit down and to consider what the consequences would be to the membership base. We just sort of thought to ourselves, CrossFit's doing stupid shit. We want to separate ourselves from CrossFit. We don't want the market to perceive us as a CrossFit gym. We want to do other things. So let's just take it out. And how I would do it differently is set up a communication campaign explaining the reasons why we're changing the name and everything behind it. Because we ended up having to have that conversation, but just 150 times. And another thing I would probably consider as well is I would pull up the list of members that we had at the time and I would look at each of them and I would write next to them an X or a tick. A tick would be this person suits the new brand. This is who the new rebrand is for. And an X next to the people who I'm like, this will upset them. They live and die by CrossFit. Mm. Knowing that they're no longer at a CrossFit named gym or at a gym that is focusing specifically on CrossFit, when they come to me and complain and they're upset, I'm rather than trying to keep explaining it to them and butting my head against the wall and taking up my mental headspace, I'm going to tell them to go somewhere else. And that would have been a much better process, because the problem with that is now you have a client base that is waiting for the old thing to come back, and they're constantly disappointed with all the new stuff that you have. And you've got this new clientele or this current clientele that you're trying to serve better and go harder in this new thing. But it's kind of like you're running forward and they're the fucking ball and chain on your ankles. They're slowing you down. They're like, no, come on, bring the other stuff back. Bring the rope climbs and the muscle ups and the squat snatches and the fucking crazy volume and stuff. And it just makes it a really unenjoyable experience for you. Whereas when you just go 100% all in, then what is it? Cut once, cut deep.
Mm.
Once you go all in on this thing and then you're just happy to just see members leave and cut them, it's a much easier process. Hurts more at the time, but long term, much better.
Yeah, and you'd probably say, reflecting on it, that almost always rebrands, because the attracting of customers is going to be slower than the losing of customers. So almost always a rebrand is going to involve some taking of a hit.
Yeah,
because you're probably going to upset some percentage of your existing clients, and then the ones that are happy and maybe are more willing to bring their friends now because like you've really made the gym more suited to them. That's a slower process.
Yeah,
a slower process getting referrals and attracting new clients than a client saying, you know, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
So that's something you got to be, be aware of. Is it the right season for your gym to do it?
Because
I think doing a rebrand out of desperation can be a pretty bad option for someone.
Right.
You know, I think it can be better from a healthier position for your business. But if you're desperate, rebranding to try and get the right clients, like, it might just not be the time for it.
It's tough, yeah, because part of the reason you're in this position is because you don't have a strong brand and it's not speaking to a certain clientele. But yeah, you're right. In the short term, you can upset a lot of internal clients. But I'd say you can mitigate that by having good communication. Yeah. And then if you pull up that membership list and you have some exes there and you don't want to lose them, you have to like really sit down with them and spend some serious one-on-one time, probably digging into like, why they're here, some of their goals, how it's not, it's still going to be a good place for them, and that you're gonna have to lay down the law for them. You're gonna have to be like, I can't have you complaining about this. I can't have you doing this. You can't be talking behind my back and starting messenger groups to, just talk about how the old brand was better and how we're changing and stuff, because that's the stuff that happens.
Yeah.
People lose, like you said, people hate change, right? So it's very tough. So have we got examples? Are we gonna bring up the examples of bad brands?
Yeah, I was just gonna add to the communication. Like, you're probably gonna have to do about 5 times as much communication as you think is necessary.
Oh yeah,
because that's just like the maths on it, right? This will be plenty. It's like, cool, times that by 5, and you'll potentially get the message across.
Well, always remember that a rough rule that I tell myself is that every single piece of communication that I put out, just imagine, and it's actually less than this, but I've looked at the data across just specifically for Creature. I have more data on the My Muscle project, but specifically for Creature, across all our content, the general rule is about 10% of people will see it.
Mm.
So, but how many times do you see your content? 100% of the time. So for you, it always feels like, I've seen this message 1,000 times. Why do I have to keep saying this? Even as we talk on the podcast, we rehash a lot of information because we know not everyone hears it every single time. So every time I put out like a reminder about the holiday hours or something, I think, okay, only 10% of people will see this. And so what I do is I go, how many channels can I do it? Text message, email, notifications in the gym, posters in the gym, reminding the coaches to tell their clients. So you just keep doing. It's going to compound. You're going to get more out of that 10%. And then just knowing, okay, I've sent it once. I'm probably going to need to send this 5 or 6 times because so many people miss it. I mean, how many times have you guys put out a message about, this public holiday, guys, remember, it's 9 a.m. only, and you get 5 text messages. People rocked up at 8 a.m. going, why is the gym closed?
Mm.
And you go, I told you guys so many times. We even had the face-to-face chat. Like, people just forget, right? So just remember, with all your communication, 10% is a pretty good rule of your client base will see it. So remember, you just have to keep, I don't think you need to put out 10 times the amount you normally would, but like Raph said, 4 to 5 times the amount you would normally.
100%. Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I would say the communication we get the most, Lockie and I, around this piece of information is literally because gym owners get frustrated that there's too many gyms kind of on their street or in their area that look the same as them.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's probably, one of the biggest frustrations for all the brothers and sisters in the same game that we're in, is you just get, you know, particularly if it's CrossFit, the same name as you almost.
Mm.
Like, I've had people back in the day that would turn up in my gym and they're meant to go to the other CrossFit gym.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, dude, it's like the same. Yeah. Can I just go to this one?
Yeah.
And that, like, that can also be, you know, something you got to consider. Like, who are the people around me? Because, you know, when you're a brick and mortar business, you are competing against everyone, but you're also really competing against the people in your local area, more so than maybe an online business. So considering, like, who is around you, that's going to be an important point as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be different for sure.
So in terms of some successful rebrands, one, if you are in Australia, has been, in terms of fitness, has actually been the Fitness First rebrand. So
yep.
They were, people, you know, remember that. They had like a pretty, I don't know exactly what their clientele base is across the country, but, you know, a bit of a stranglehold on that sort of Globo gym, right? They were like kind of the number one in the country, a Globo gym. And they started to get, you know, some bad publicity. People, everyone used to call them Finance First because they were just known for like locking people into contracts.
Mm.
And then there was a huge rise in functional fitness. And this, the type of gym they had set up, just, it was old. Like, it was just not that popular anymore.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, it's like a regular gym. None of the cool functional stuff. And they lock you in for like 30 years and you never go.
Yeah.
So they did a huge, and they did it at a time when they were struggling, huge rebrand. So all the colors changed, the logo changed, but to go with it, the actual inside of the gyms changed.
Yeah.
So like the, how much was dedicated to functional fitness, completely overhauled, all the uniforms, the trainers changed, even just like the messaging about like the, you know, keep it interesting, all that type of messaging changed inside the gyms as well. And that was an unbelievably successful from the reports rebrand. It's like the gyms that were dying, you know, refilled. And I know even they got all new equipment to go with it in an Iron Edge contract to get around that more functional training. So that was just a classic example of really our first point of keeping up with the times in terms of design and look, but then also the actual training.
Mm. And then one of the rebrands, then there's also, like, we'll get into a bad rebrand, but also then there's, like, you guys saw color made a big difference there, right? So Fitness First, their color was blue, and then they changed it to red, which is huge. Like, most people don't change their color because the colors, you know, it's iconic, right? Yeah. Some, like, certain brands, like Coke is red, right? That's the iconic color of Coke. Imagine if Coke changed their from red to blue, that'd be like Pepsi, right? So it's all green or something, right? It's just weird. So there are iconic colors there. And you would say that Fitness First blue was an iconic color. It was everywhere. But that move to red, I think, was almost a move of desperation, I think, to really kind of go all in and do it. And they pulled it off, like, to their credit, which was pretty incredible. And now, I think from, you know, my perspective, and I think that many people will disagree with me on this, but I think a lot of people will agree also on me is, also with me, I should say, is when CrossFit didn't rebrand, I feel like, yes, they have that iconic CrossFit text, but there just needed to be something new, something fresh to come in. You know, it's the same exact logo that they had from whenever they started, 1999, 2000 or whatever. It was just time for something different. Now, you can always keep classic elements of your brand around, for sure. But you need to keep it fresh. You need to keep it new. People want to see new stuff because new gets people excited. New gives you, opens new doorways for you to start new conversations and try different logos. But they just never invested in that side of the brand for whatever reason. Obviously, they have some of the most questionable decision-making of any sort of $100 million plus, potentially $1 billion company. So I was always very confused that nothing fresh ever came out of CrossFit, the main brand. I think maybe they did some slight iterations of the CrossFit games, I want to say. But in terms of CrossFit themselves, yeah, they never did anything new. And I think it just got a little bit tired. And then all the negative associations that started to build up with the CrossFit brand, they, you know, that's an opportunity in a rebrand to shake some of those, to be like, no, we're different now and we do this. And, you know, you can change the colors and the look and a logo. But I mean, I don't know how many times companies have rebranded to kind of say, hey, we've shed our old skin and our old ways. And now we're, it's this new era, right? And to kind of symbolize, you know, moving forward, they never did. And I think that they were just, all the negative stuff associated with CrossFit just stuck around. And I think when people see that logo now, it just means very different things to very different people because they weren't able to reset the brand.
Yeah, and it's a bit confusing because they even, like we talked about earlier, they seem like they're trying to attract a slightly different type of clientele as well.
Yeah.
They bring out content around, you know, older people or just more like sick people that need to get well. But it's like the same logo that you basically associated with the hardcore early adopters,
yeah,
which were kind of the fitness freaks that were like doing these crazy ring workouts in their board shorts and barefoot running shoes.
It's very strange. It's honestly very strange that they never did. And now I'll give you an example of a company that we've talked about before on the show that has, so from this perspective, they rebranded really well, but they have kept classic elements of their old brand inside their new brand. And that is Gymshark, the apparel company, the startup apparel company that did extremely well. They basically had the most disgusting, ugly, like shark in a tank top, like flexing, and like this terrible logo, Gymshark. They kind of transformed it to this new Lululemon-esque kind of modern shark head thing. Obviously kept the same name, but then now they still every now and then they'll throw back the classic logo, they'll throw back elements of the shark, the old shark with the muscle flexing, but they kind of rehash it in the new style. And that's just a way to keep the old brand fresh. It might be like if CrossFit rebranded to something more modern and fresh, they might bring back classic elements. Maybe they do, you know, they did the CrossFit Legends series or something.
Yeah.
Maybe that'd be an opportunity to bring back some rehashed version of that brand, but just wasn't a priority for them. Wasn't a priority. Bad leadership, I don't know, in the wrong areas or whatever. But their choices are their choices, and we're just kind of sharing our opinions on it. So, last thing we'll sort of bring up is...
One thing I'll add to the Gymshark one, which I think is one you can do in your fitness business as well, is, I mean, they rebranded it to make it more premium. Like, it looked like a cheap... You look at the old stuff, it looks like a cheaper brand.
Very much so.
Expensive. Gymshark is expensive clothes, which obviously does very well for their business. But that's such a good example of just... Yeah, they kept some of the old brands. So like, you know, the diehards are still like, oh yeah, it's cool. It's still Gymshark. Still recognize it. But they've made it more premium to justify a high price point.
Yeah.
Which is probably for most fitness businesses what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
How can I look more premium so I can charge more? Because for a service business, that is like the holy grail, right? Where you can just charge more for your fitness services.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And just attract higher paying clients as well, right? So then there was a company that everyone's heard of, and is, I guess it's becoming the classic example of a failure, but I don't even know if people stuck around to get to see the rebrand, but MySpace.
Hmm.
MySpace was a certain look, and then I think probably as they started to lose a lot of their users over to Facebook, they rebranded, and it flopped. It wasn't a great rebrand, and honestly, I think there was probably this... And when they rebranded, they needed to then open up a new service, basically, and be like, this is how we're different, this is what we're doing, and change a few, add new features, that sort of stuff. And they just didn't. They just changed the logo a little bit, and they kept the same platform, the same user experience, and that was it. It was dead very quickly. So, sorry, Tom, you didn't
nail his rebrand.
Didn't pull that one off. So, obviously, tons of different examples of how you can rebrand, and hopefully some insights and reasons why you want to rebrand.
And where would you get started? Would you, if you're looking for your fitness business, would you look at fitness businesses you look up to and you want to emulate?
That's a good question. I would say, firstly, the user. Mm. Like, think about who your ideal cluster client is. And then what I would do is, you know, write out their worldviews, their beliefs, their buying behaviors. And then what I would do is right underneath this person is write, say, I would say, like, fashion, media, sport, food. I'd write a few different categories, main categories, and underneath them, cars, automobiles, underneath them, write the type of brands that this type of customer purchases from in those verticals. And then what you'll find is that there's a lot of consistency amongst those brands. Take what those brands do well, take them to your designer, your branding team, or if you don't have one, a freelancer or whatever, they're going to want some kind of portfolio before they get started on the rebrand and go, I want this look and feel. And then that is a really good starting point. If you haven't written up sort of like brand values and that sort of stuff, so like words and values you're associated with, you know, if your brand is associated with like hardcore fitness, but you're trying to help like older people that aren't hardcore, it might be like sustainable, lifestyle, health, you know, these are maybe more values and different words you want to be associated with. So that's a really good starting point, because once you have the foundation of the client you're trying to serve, everything should get a little bit easier or at least more focused from that point onwards.
Yeah, I think that process of going to the client is going to be so much better than just you looking at brands that you like.
Yeah. And I would also say a budget for this is, I think you probably want to put $5,000 to $10,000 aside for a really solid rebrand. I think if you're going less than $5,000 for a rebrand, you may kind of half cook it. And that's kind of like, I don't know if it's worth rebranding. Mm. if you don't spend the right amount of time and money on it.
Yeah, because it's not cheap, because you're gonna get the new brand, whatever. Then you're gonna have to redo the signage that you've got, maybe redo the stuff you got on the website, maybe repaint the walls,
move some equipment in, move some out.
It's not a super cheap price. I think it's a worthwhile one. You know, Christmas could be a really good time to do it.
New year, yeah.
When you get, I mean, first of all, it's just everyone knows something new. You get new clients in the door. It's also just practically your gym's closed.
Yeah.
For a period of time, so you can get the painting done. You can get it all done that way. So if you are considering this, probably would be one of the best times to go about it.
100%. Amazing. All right, guys, before we let you go, two episodes ago, we mentioned there was an opportunity that we had a while ago from a local business in Sydney that is basically a very well-established business, was just kind of leveraging our audience to try and sell their fitness business on to someone that was wanted to. And we have a similar opportunity at the moment. So different person, but they are looking to move on to their next fitness venture. They want to stay in the industry, but kind of work in a completely different vertical, something completely separate to their facility. And they're looking to offload their facility. It's a very profitable facility. It's in a great area, does extremely well. If you're interested in an opportunity like this, if you want to start your own fitness business, but you know that bootstrapping it and starting from scratch is not a great decision, and instead you want to kind of buy into a really solid clientele, you know, their average client spend is much higher than the industry average. You have an opportunity to build your own brand within it. So they would strip back the brand, you would get the core, you get the equipment, you get the space, you get the client base, you get all that stuff. If you want more information on that, if you're interested in something like that, then shoot us an email at media@themindmuscleproject.com and just put in the subject line gym as the subject. So our team can filter for that. So make sure you check that out. So media@themindmuscleproject.com and the subject line gym if you're interested in something like that. And then like I mentioned as well, guys, at the start of the episode, get all of our guides at themindmuscleproject.com/free. And I will actually link up both of those things I just talked about in the description. So you can go click over to that now.
Awesome. Cool. And today we are brought to you by Beyond Macros. So we obviously been talking about Beyond Macros in terms of their nutrition coaching, but they also do coaching for basically fitness nutrition coaches as well. And one of our coaches at the gym recently went through the program. So this basically teaches you how to, a lot of what we talk about here, you know, charge properly, how to get new clients, really the basics to make it actually profitable and fun to coach nutrition online. And in the actual program, we had a chat to her about how she went. She made the money back it took to invest in the program in the first 2 months. To give you an idea, she just started with 2 clients she was working with. By the end of it, she had 13 clients, and I think she charges like double as much as when she first started, which is what Matt always says, one of the most important things for nutrition coaches is they just don't charge enough for their services, so it never works out. And the most important part of it is really that you actually work one-on-one with Matt. So it's not some like e-course where you just like get the info and then you try and implement it. You actually work with Matt like face-to-face or face-to-face over a computer screen to work through the kinks, the email templates, all the type of stuff, how much to charge to actually make it work for you.
Amazing. Cool. All right, guys, everything we just mentioned in the description of this episode, go check it out, and we'll speak to you next week.